content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Greetings, everyone. I'm Jennifer Green for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Teen Magazines. For the next half hour, I will be reading to you from theteenmagazine.com and teenvogue.com. Our first article today from theteenmagazine.com, Banning Books, An Overview of Book Censorship and Its Consequences. And this article was written by Haley Kruger. In an attempt to preserve the innocence of children, hundreds of books are banned from schools, stores, and libraries each year. When someone challenges or attempts to ban a book, they make a decision for everybody based on their beliefs alone, without considering others' opinions. The most common reasons for banning books are sexually explicit scenes, violence, or just opposing a popular belief. However, those challenging books often do not consider whether the overall message or even the rest of the book is valuable, despite having one part they do not agree with or like. This has been happening for a long time, but has been especially prevalent in the 20th and 21st centuries. Most popular classic books you have probably read in school or at least heard of have been banned at least once, along with many newer books. The issue the United States is dealing with in the present is the banning of books in multiple states due to diverse racial and LGBTQIA+ representation, depriving students of all ages from learning about the growing state of the country. This does not hinder change and diversity in the whole country, but it does create a new generation of ignorance instead. It is immensely important to understand this problem and its potential consequences. Begin by looking at the past. History of book censorship. Book censorship has existed for most of history, some dating back to BC and AD. Homer's The Odyssey was banned in Rome for expressing Greek ideas of freedom. The first case of book banning in the United States was the New English Canon of Thomas Morton in 1637 for its critique of Puritan values. But the first time a book was banned on a national level was in 1855 with Harriet Beecher Stowe's Uncle Tom's Cabin. Stowe's novel was challenged and then banned for many reasons, the main one being its anti-slavery sentiments. Since then, thousands of books have been challenged. Diary of a Young Girl by Anne Frank was officially banned in Virginia in 1982 when parents of students complained about its sexually offensive passages. The passages in question are of Anne Frank, the then 13-year-old girl, describing her growing body. In the years following, it was banned and removed from multiple libraries throughout the country due to its supposed explicitness and the fact that it is too depressing. Anne Frank's diary is a crucial resource to understand the Holocaust and empathize with those affected, but rather than focus on its values and importance, many people have chosen to ban it based on a few pages. Ironically, Fahrenheit 451 by Ray Bradbury, a book about book censorship, has been challenged and banned multiple times. In this dystopian novel, the government burns books, claiming that without books, everybody will be more similar and will therefore get along better, when, in reality, burning books is a form of government control. Many have tried to ban this book on account of vulgar language and depictions of drugs and drinking. Like with Diary of a Young Girl, many have chosen to ignore the important message and focus on one or two small things. They choose to completely deprive themselves and others of knowledge and new perspectives rather than ignoring a couple of passages they may not agree with or enjoy. Here are a few more books that have been banned in the 20th century. The Great Gatsby by F. Scott Fitzgerald, To Kill a Mockingbird by Harper Lee, The Catcher and the Rye by J.D. Salinger, The Color Purple by Alice Walker, 1984, and Animal Farm by George Orwell. You probably are not surprised to read that these books have been banned in the past as things like violence, harsh language, and sexually explicit scenes were not as mainstream in the media as they are today. However, book censorship is not a thing of the past. Modern book censorship. In the first half of the 2022 to 2023 school year, 1,477 books were banned from schools. This number is far greater than years prior, most likely due to the fact that the criteria for a book ban is expanding. In 2022, along with previous reasons like violence and explicitness, 30% of banned books include non-white characters or discuss racial issues, and 26% include LGBTQIA+ characters or themes. The Hate U Give by Angie Thomas is about a black teen who witnesses the murder of her friend at the hands of a police officer. This book addresses themes of racism, police violence, and more, yet has been challenged and banned multiple times due to inappropriate language and violence. Yes, it does feature strong language and intense violence, but it is not worth pulling this book from library shelves and depriving students of the story and its themes. Drama by Raina Telgemeier, a middle-grade graphic novel about a middle school drama class, has been banned multiple times because of its inclusion of two gay characters. Telgemeier has been accused of hiding agendas in her books, and Drama was banned in Texas on account of sexual explicitness, which is really just two boys kissing on stage. Here are a few more modern banned books you have probably heard of or read. Gender Queer, a memoir by Maya Kababi. All Boys Aren't Blue by George M. Johnson. Looking for Alaska by John Green. The Perks of Being a Wallflower by Stephen Chbosky. Heartstopper by Alice Oseman. These books are typically banned on account of explicitness, violence, or strong language, but the pattern is undeniable. Most modern banned books include racial and LGBTQIA+ themes. The consequences of banning books. Books and stories serve as valuable tools to learn about different perspectives, to expand knowledge, and evoke empathy. Experiencing different viewpoints and perspectives can be uncomfortable at times, but banning books entirely is not the correct response. Books can be pulled from libraries and schools, but the stories within them are still inspired by the real world. Books featuring violence and injustices can be taken away to protect children, but violence and injustices will persist in the world. Books with LGBTQIA+ representation can be hidden from children, but this will only create ignorant individuals in a world where the community is real and will not remain hidden. That is the major consequence: ignorance. Children are naturally self-focused, so they are told stories and taught to read them from a young age in order to develop empathy. Book censorship purposely narrows down the range of books a child can read until the narrative is completely controlled. What can you do? You have probably heard the phrase, "read banned books," seen it in bookstores or on laptop stickers. That is exactly what you should do. Book banning is about suppressing information, so don't let that happen. Read classic banned books or modern banned books. In fact, you probably already have. Celebrate Banned Book Week in October and collect information and perspectives that will move you and the world forward, not backward. And our next article from theteenmagazine.com. A Defense of Spoilers. Are they as bad as they seem? And this article was written by Angeline Zhao. We tend to think of spoilers as an absolute no-no while watching movies or television shows or anything of the like. I'm sure most of us can remember the craze over Avengers Endgame when it first came out, with people screaming, "Please, no spoilers, please," every other minute. Our avoidance of spoilers is a near universal experience at this point. Most of us try so hard to avoid spoilers for the shows and movies we have dedicated ourselves to watching, believing that finding out the plot beforehand will completely ruin the experience. But are spoilers seriously as bad as we make them out to be? I don't think so. Spoilers can be helpful. I know this probably sounds crazy, but hear me out. Yes, it can be irritating when people attempt to scream spoilers in your ear after you've just told them to not say anything about the plot. I can sympathize with that feeling. But spoilers can be good for us sometimes. They can make watching movies and TV shows a more pleasant experience, as contradictory as that may sound. Spoilers keep us informed about whatever we're planning on watching. When I'm scrolling online in search of a new movie or a TV show to binge watch, most of the time, I'm looking for a very specific kind of content. Sometimes I want to have a good long cry. Sometimes I just want to feel better. It can be an enormous letdown to start watching a movie or show that looks cheerful and lighthearted, only to find out at the very end that the main character dies a horrible death. And this is coming from personal experience. Sure, it might still be good, but it's just not what I was looking for at the moment. I don't want to invest so much time in a show, only to find out that my favorite character dies in season 8, or that they turn into such an annoying person that I have to take a 6-month break before watching it again, just to avoid feeling so betrayed. Gilmore Girls, anyone? The point is, spoilers save us from going through that enormous hassle. Because of this, I often read plot summaries of movies or TV shows before I start them, as a little spoiler to myself. It's not so much that it ruins the entire plot of the movie, I just want to know the general plot points so I am not left feeling completely deceived at the end. Reading these spoilers allows us to easily decide what we want to watch without wasting our time on things we won't end up liking as much as we expected. We can skim the summaries, learn a bit about the characters, then decide if we want to start watching it or not. It's a win-win for everyone. Plot is not everything. One main issue with spoilers is that it gives away the major plot points of a story before you are able to witness it yourself. People often don't want to know if a character is going to live or die until it's played out on the big screen, because they feel like it will take away from the dramatic impact. But something we have failed to realize is that plot is not everything. Plot is not what makes a movie good. It's definitely not what makes a movie so amazing you proclaim it to everyone you know that you'd give anything to watch it again for the first time. Without a good plot, it's true that a movie or TV show will likely die out. But for most of us, it's the acting, the character arcs, the little tiny details that we don't consciously notice while watching that are so, so important to whether we end up enjoying it. None of that can be experienced through spoilers. None of that can be experienced through someone telling you, "Oh, yeah, Iron Man dies at the end of Endgame." Sorry, in my defense, the movie has been out for 5 years. Sure, plot twists can involve a huge shock factor that impacts the experience of watching a film, but those are only impactful for the 5 or 10 seconds when the shock is sinking in. They don't last the way good characters do, the way good storytelling does. We wouldn't care about any of these plot twists if we didn't care so much more about the characters and the moments leading up to them. That's the problem with our current lens that focuses so intently on avoiding spoilers on plot twists. There is so much more work that goes into creating a fantastic movie or TV show that simply cannot be grasped just by reading or hearing a spoiler. Movies and TV shows are made to be watched, to be experienced, to be enjoyed. Knowing a tiny little plot point before the show, in reality, just gives you a little head start from everyone else watching it with you. It's not a bad thing. It most certainly won't ruin your entire experience. Believing that is just a result of our current fascination with plot devices over almost everything else involved in the details of a good story. And so, continue avoiding spoilers if you wish. If you genuinely cannot bear to know the details of a plot before watching it yourself. But know that maybe, just maybe, spoilers aren't as bad as you think they are. They can be helpful to you in times when you just want to watch a cheerful little movie with no drama and no deaths involved whatsoever. And remember to focus on the other things that make our most beloved movies and TV shows so great, beyond the dramatic plot twists that we love to gossip about so very much. Our next article from TeenVogue.com. Air quality in the Northeast U.S. affected by Canadian wildfires. What to know? And this article was written by Emma Spector. And there is a note. This article was originally published by Vogue. New York residents woke up to a bit of a shock outside their windows this week as a thick haze of smoke from wildfires raging across Canada enveloped much of the East Coast, impacting about 90 million people. As of early on Wednesday morning, New York City had the second worst air quality and pollution in the world, second only to Delhi, India. Below, get all the details on what's going on and how to take steps to protect yourself if you're in the area. What precautions have been taken to mitigate the effects of the East Coast's poor air quality? The state of New Jersey has upgraded its air quality alert to unhealthy, with Governor Phil Murphy urging residents to stay indoors. In New York City and Washington, D.C., all outdoor activities for public school students have been canceled, although classes will continue as scheduled. New York Mayor Eric Adams echoed Murphy's advice in a statement on Wednesday, calling the poor air quality an unprecedented event in our city, and adding, "At the moment, we recommend vulnerable New Yorkers stay inside, and all New Yorkers should limit outdoor activity to the greatest extent possible. This is not the day to train for a marathon or to do an outside event with your children." What kind of health effects can the poor air quality have? The amount of particulate matter, which according to the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention can be made up of dust, dirt, soot, smoke, or a mix of all of the above, in the air was measured at 14.5 times the World Health Organization's air quality guideline value, which is concerning because those particles are small enough to be inhaled deep into the lungs and thus enter the body's bloodstream. The poor air quality being seen in the Northeast U.S. can cause breathing problems for anyone, but children, older adults, pregnant people, and people with asthma or other respiratory conditions are at particular risk. How are people being encouraged to protect themselves? The American Lung Association's recommendations for protecting yourself from the potentially harmful effects of particulate matter in the air include staying indoors as much as possible, wearing a high-quality KN95 mask when it's necessary to be outside, avoiding exercising or doing any strenuous activity outdoors, using air conditioners on the recirculation setting to avoid pulling outside air indoors, and using air cleaning devices with HEPA filters when possible. A And our next article from TeenVogue.com. Megan Fox hits back at Republican claims that she forces her kids to wear dresses. And this article was written by Ashley Carter. Megan Fox and her ex, Brian Austin Green, are defending their parenting style after a former conservative political candidate claimed that Fox forced her kids to wear girl clothes. Earlier this week, Robbie Starbuck, who ran for Congress and lost, went viral for making outlandish allegations about Fox and her three young children, Noah, 10, Bodie, 9, and Journey, 6. In his tweet, Starbuck alleged that he used to live in the same gated community as Fox and her three boys, and claimed he saw two of them have a full-on breakdown, saying they were forced by their mom to wear girl clothes. He added that, "It's pure child abuse. Pray for them." Fox didn't hesitate to defend herself and her kids after Starbuck's tweet went viral, as she posted a lengthy response on Instagram to the failed congressman's claims. "I really don't want to give you this attention because clearly you're a clout chaser, but let me teach you something," Fox wrote in a caption under a screenshot of Starbuck's tweet. "Exploiting my child's gender identity to gain attention in your political campaign has put you on the wrong side of the universe." She continued, "I have been burned at the stake by insecure, narcissistic, impotent little men like you many times, and yet I'm still here. You effed with the wrong witch." While Fox is fairly private about her children and keeps them off of social media for the most part, she has been open in the past about her oldest child Noah's choice to wear girls' clothing. In an interview with Glamour last year, Fox said that Noah started wearing dresses when he was 2 years old. "I bought a bunch of books that sort of addressed these things and addressed a full spectrum of what this is," Fox said at the time of Noah's choice. "Some of the books are written by transgender children. Some of the books are just about how you can be a boy and wear a dress. You can express yourself through your clothing however you want." Fox admitted that she made sure nobody feels like they are weird or strange or different. She also said, "She can't control the way other people react to my children." The actor's ex and father of her three boys, Brian Austin Green, also defended Fox against Starbuck's remarks, calling him full of S. "It's a totally bogus story," Green told TMZ. "This person trying to claim this is true is a perfect example of someone with selfish motives that does not care about negatively affecting a parent-child relationship." And our next article from TeenVogue.com. Hailey Bieber just addressed those Kendall Jenner feud rumors. And this article was written by Emily Tannenbaum. All is well between Kendall Jenner and Hailey Bieber. Over the past week, people on the internet have been discussing a possible feud between the 27-year-old supermodel and 26-year-old Roadskin founder. Rumors of the so-called drama began surfacing after Jenner and Bieber posted separate Instagram dumps from their recent trips to France for the Monaco Grand Prix, which took place on May 28th. However, despite being in the same picturesque vacation spot, they didn't appear in each other's posts, nor were the longtime besties spotted together by fans. Jenner posed with a couple of friends along the French Riviera, while Bieber's posts featured multiple pics and videos of her husband, Justin Bieber, as well as their mutual close friend, Justine Skye. In fact, some fans claim that Bieber and Skye rendezvoused with Jenner's ex, Devin Booker, during their European vacay. The Biebers didn't see Kendall at all. Instead, she stayed with Bad Bunny and his crew, and Justin and Hailey were with Booker, one fan commented in a Reddit thread per The Sun. "Wonder if there's some drama." Another fan suggested Jenner's relationship with Bieber hasn't been the same since the Kylie Jenner / Hailey Bieber / Selena Gomez drama that went down earlier this year. On June 3rd, Bieber appeared to address the headlines directly by sharing a poolside pic with Jenner on her Instagram stories. "Feuding," she captioned the pic, which featured both of the models sunbathing in bikinis and the Instagram puppy face filter. "Sorry, Internet. Looks like you got all worked up over nothing. Again. Hailey Bieber is too busy having the best summer of my life." And there is a note. This story originally appeared in Glamour. And our next article from TeenVogue.com. Kamala Harris. Abortion bans post-Roe are putting patients and doctors at risk. And this article was written by the Teen Vogue staff. On a warm summer day in 2022, the Supreme Court overturned Roe v. Wade, eliminating the constitutional right to abortion. That ruling left over a third of women in the United States, as well as trans men and non-binary people, without access to this basic medical procedure. Ahead of the June 24th anniversary of the court's fateful decision, Vice President Kamala Harris invited Dr. Colleen McNicholas, Chief Medical Officer for the Reproductive Health Services of Planned Parenthood St. Louis Region, to her office in the West Wing of the White House to discuss the state of access to reproductive health care. Harris and McNicholas talked about the pressures now being put on providers in states with strict abortion bans, like Missouri, where providing an abortion now comes with the risk of a felony charge and years in prison. These kinds of laws are causing a lot of folks to really reconsider that we have to be vigilant and really understand all of the ramifications of this, Harris said. And to have a federal law that protects reproductive care in all 50 states. President Joe Biden and Harris have called on Congress to codify abortion rights into federal law. We've run out of time for today's episode of Teen Magazines. Be sure to listen next time. We hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Jennifer Green, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Teen Magazines is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call us at 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. We thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.